This is the Hack Your Wealth Podcast, episode 87. Welcome to the Hack Your Wealth Podcast, where we teach wealth building hacks for lawyers, engineers, and MBAs. I'm your host, Andrew Chen. All right, thanks so much again for tuning into the podcast. For today's episode, I invited another guest to come and share their tips and strategies and insights with us. So before we jump into that, as always, I want to invite you to join the private Hack Your Wealth Facebook group. You can access that at hackyourwealth.com/FB. Definitely encourage you to join us there. It is a place for us to connect, have a two-way dialogue. I'm in there every single day, often multiple times a day, and I try to respond to every question and comment there. And it's a place where people can ask about financial independence, early retirement, tax strategies, real estate investing, side business income, online income, career transitions, career advice, or just ask about whatever's on their mind related to personal finance or career-related issues. Definitely encourage you to check that out. It's a great, friendly, helpful group of people, and we would love to have you there. Again, hackyourwealth.com/FB. All right, let's jump into today's interview. My guest today is Sharon Koifman. Sharon is the founder of Distant Job, a recruiting agency that focuses on helping companies find full-time remote employees around the world. In his own words, he is obsessed with remote management. And over two decades of running companies remotely, he has studied how to create strong remote work cultures. He's also the author of a book called Surviving Remote Work: How to Thrive as a Leader and Entrepreneur in the Remote Age, which he wrote after the pandemic transformed our norms and expectations about remote work. So I'm looking forward to diving into these topics today with Sharon and hearing his insights on the future of work. Let's get into it. We are all set. Ready. Thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me. How are you doing?
Can't complain. You know, really, life is good. I'm remote. I am. I get to work from my house. I am enjoying. All my employees are happy. You know, in tough times like this, I feel very blessed being the situation that I am.
Yeah, definitely. I hear you. It's the dream. Are you based in? I think I saw. Are you based in Montreal?
I am. I am.
Excellent. Excellent. And right. Your team is all distributed around the world, or mostly in North America?
No, all over the world. There's not one person actually. I'm the only person in Canada.
Oh,
and
wow.
Probably the only at this moment, because we adjusted things. Yeah, I'm the only person in North America.
Wow. Okay, well, you're definitely running a global organization then. Well,
indeed.
You know, so we're here today to talk a bit about the future of work. I'm especially interested in talking about remote work, which is, you know, your specialty, because that's of particular interest to people in the FIRE community, which is financial independence, retire early, who are interested in either, you know, early retirement or becoming digital nomads, or anyway, finding some way to work remotely so that they can untether themselves from any single location. And so actually, to kick things off, I'd love to just kind of learn a little bit more about your background. Like, how did you get into remote recruitment and how did you become an advocate for remote work?
So I've been running remote companies from my own computer for the past 20 years. I actually learned this from my dad, who ran an engineering company back when digital was not popular, but you had a computer, you could make your own draft, send it to the machine shop. So he literally ran his entire company building big wire and cable manufacturing machines from his own computer. And I did that where I started, I built a web hosting company and an outsourcing solution company, all from employees from India. I've learned a lot of the challenges that involve with outsourcing industry, that lack of connection, the fact that certain people back then, I hope they don't do it as much right now, but back then people would literally hire outsourcing companies to do the job for them, losing all the culture, losing all that control, all the processes they know, because it was just cheap labor. Back then, it was like literally white collar sweatshops. And based on that, when I sold my company, my first company, I realized that there has to be a better solution out there. And the focus should be about the people. You don't need to hire an outsourcing company because you want to hire internationally. because you want to take advantage of this massive pool of amazing talent, which work at countries where the cost of living is lower. But the first such great pool of amazing talents that there has to be a better way. And I decided to build a company that is focused on finding the right talent and get them to work directly for those North American technology companies, which
okay.
is what Distant Job is.
Got it. So that kind of segues into what I wanted to ask next, which is, you know, just so folks have a sense of where you're coming from, what your remote recruitment agency now today focuses on in terms of industries and roles and functions that you specialize in. And it sounds like technology companies. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
So bread and butter is IT digital, right? More focus even on developers, but we do everything around IT digital, and we make sure that we work only with full-time focus, career-driven individuals. So this is not contractors. This is not freelancers. This is not outsourced people. It's really focused. People want to integrate part of your processes and core values.
And are we talking like big tech startups, like, or traditional companies that have in their IT department? Like, what are we talking about when you say IT?
My limit. I'm a recruitment agency. I'm not a usually the people that come to us are small to medium sized technology companies. But we do get once in a while big enterprise company, and we're perfectly happy to deliver amazing people for them also.
Okay, gotcha. And roles and functions wise? It sounds like developer heavy, other roles and functions?
Developer heavy, system administrators, architects, designers, sometimes marketers. We really deliver well in system admins, and sometimes accountants. But really, developers, programmers, IT, digital specialists, that's what we do.
Got it. And do you do anything outside of tech, like, you know, just traditional marketing, sales, law, you know, finance, any other industries?
So like I said, accountants, surprisingly, and system administrators. We provide exceptional system administrators that actually can read your mind, potentially, maybe.
Okay, excellent. Tell us a little bit about your book. Like, what is it about? And, you know, for those who haven't read it, what do you really want people to walk away knowing after reading it?
First of all, I want people to know that this adventure that we went on in the past 2 years is, nobody's happy about the pandemic. Nobody's happy about being locked down, but you should be excited about what's happening with remote work. There is an increase in productivity. There's an increase in self-satisfaction. People work better. They're happier, more independent. There's a lot of research done on that. And this is the first step in actually being better remote worker and remote managers. And I didn't mention the book is called Surviving Remote Work. So it is all about being a better remote manager and a better remote worker and taking advantage of this new exciting thing that is happening in the world.
Okay. So, you know, obviously your company existed before the pandemic. And I was wondering, like, could you comment a little bit about what was the nature and type of remote jobs that existed before the pandemic? And then how did the pandemic change remote work in terms of maybe like acceptability by employers, desirability by employees? Kind of want to get a pre and post.
Well, so I think you pretty much answered it. Nothing changed in terms of possibilities. I mean, any intellectual-based job, any job that does not require you to do some physical work, remote is perfect for it, and was always perfect for it. What changed was the companies accepting it, not only accepting it, but accepting that this is potentially a good thing, right? This is a big difference. Not only they tolerate it, said, okay, fine, well, we'll do this awful, evil remote job. I think that a lot of companies came around and realized that, oh my God, we're actually getting more production. We're actually, our employees are happier, and why not continue doing it? And that's the big change. The big change is the acceptability of it and the attraction to it, to the remote work.
What are the types of like fields or job? I know like you specialize in probably more developer heavy tech focused roles, but I imagine you have exposure in remote work and recruiting type of communities, and I'm based on what you've seen, what are the types of jobs or fields that are most popular for remote work currently, as in are the most in demand in terms of number of applicants?
So if you're asking me what's in demand, developers, IT specialists.
Not in terms of what the employers, but in terms of number of applicants.
Developers, IT specialists. Really, people get it on both sides. So there's demands, and developers specifically want to be remote. What I feel is a shame that's not moving forward is services such as law, accounting, professional service related jobs. They're still not accepting it. They're not really, they want to go back to the office, and they're, even when they're remote, they don't get it, right? That they still don't get how much better they can be if they run a fully remote operation. But still, the IT field is the one that got it the fastest on both sides.
I see. So, you know, my flip side question around most in demand in terms of unfilled openings, it sounds like similarly would be true IT developer kind of heavy roles. Is that right?
Yeah. The challenge with IT in general, especially the development part, is that every 5 years, the need for developers doubles. It doubles in size, right? So there's not enough. There's just not enough. You didn't need the pandemic to, for some people, they just need to be bitten on the head with a bat to clarify it. But there's no choice but to move to international recruitment, because there's simply not enough developers locally to do what needs to be done.
Right. So given that you, I guess, have a lot, I guess, primary exposure to tech companies and tech organizations, like what percent of tech companies would you say, ranging from small startups to tech giants, have you found are actually now providing a permanent remote work option, maybe due to the pandemic? And does it differ by size of company?
So I find that the majority of companies that are open to the idea are mostly hybrid. And that is about 25%. Right, based on what I understand, based on what I read, I didn't do the research myself, but recent hybrid companies, which means those are companies that are comfortable with somebody working from home close to the office. I actually don't consider that fully remote, right? Fully, and they're still kind of missing the point as far as I'm concerned, right? Because remote means you hire them from anywhere and everywhere and let them live wherever they want, whenever they want, right? And they still need to come sit on their ass 9 to 5, work and do what they need to be done, but only from that, but from any location that they would want to work from.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So it sounds like you said 25%, ballpark, have a hybrid option. And then, so is fully remote the way kind of you define it, where you can truly be anywhere? What fraction would you say? Is it a minority? Is it less than half of that 25%, or more than half, et cetera?
I don't have the numbers. I don't know. I'm assuming, and assuming is, assume makes an asset of you and me, but I would say somewhere around the 5% that Got are it. Completely, completely ready to boom, go to the world even after COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. What are the best... Go ahead.
No, sorry. This does not mean that there's a lot more companies are willing to have like their extras working remote, right? But when the idea fully, no need for an office kind of service, I think only about 5%.
But like, even if the company still has an office or headquarters where some people go in, if they provide a fully remote option, you know, if you want it, then why is that not considered, you know, fully remote? Sufficiently,
because you're, as long as you have an office, you have a mentality that somebody should fill that office. Mm-hmm. In other words, you have an expectation of somebody to come in. You will never fully disconnect, right? As long as you have an office, unless you're one of those unique base camp guys that literally keep an office for entertainment, for business meeting, for stuff like that. That's one thing. Because as long as you have an office, you're expecting people to be surrounded. You're expecting to be at 10 miles radius away, 10, 20. I'm throwing a number, but at a specific radius away from the office. You're not telling them, oh, I'm in California, but you're in Ohio. No problem. Stay in Ohio. Don't come. Come for the Christmas parties once a year, right? Or twice a year. I don't know. Well, whatever entertainment thing that you do, but that means remote. When you force people to be in a specific area that is close to the office, it's really hybrid. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. That is a decision, but you're not fully taking advantage of the positive things that come with remote.
So I get that part, and like definitely the base camp sort of framework of office for, social events or big meetings is amazing because it still gives you a place to go, but obviously no obligation. But there are, as you probably are aware, there are many tech companies that have adopted, like they're not going to shut their offices, but they do allow a fully remote option. You do not have to live near the office. You could go live in Hawaii. You could go live in Wyoming or wherever. And you will just be, they actually just classify you in a different tax status. Facebook does this and Google does this and a bunch of others have followed suit. And sort of also sort of semi-large and medium companies, many of them also have this option. Is this not fully remote? I mean, that seems like it would count, no? Or
I'm not
are
buying
you
it.
like thinking about more like a
I'm
color?
just not buying it, right? I'm saying that during COVID time they'll accept it. It happened many times. Yahoo, 15 years ago, a CEO changes, everybody comes to the office, right? Yahoo attempted many times to revive themselves, failed miserably. That was pretty much their last attempt to bring everybody to the office. If you are not shrinking your office space, I mean, first of all, you're using example of multi-conglomerate and limited, stupid amount of money companies, right? I wouldn't use them as a model for standard normal pricing. If you are a normal company without stupid money, right, and you're investing in the office, you have a mentality that you want somebody to come into the office, right? And if you have an office because you have a 3 years contract and you're about to get rid of it, fine. COVID is making people, is forcing them to accept recruitment. But in 3, 4 years, I'm hoping, maybe in 6 months, I'm hoping that really COVID is going to be over. And that's going to be the real discussion. And the people that are shutting down their office are the ones that I truly believe are going to commit to this kind of model instead of just being forced their hand behind their back because engineers telling them that they don't have a choice, right? It's a very, very different mentality that not having a choice or absorbing or accepting this model as the new method of doing things. I guess that's the best way I can express it. When you get rid of the office, you're saying that I am committed to this strategy.
Do you, given the, the difficulty in filling developer roles, there's just always a, like you pointed out, there's always a constant shortage, and the war for talent is real. Do you really think that the full-time permanent remote live wherever you want options that have been introduced by, companies up and down the size sort of scale? I just can't imagine that going back. You know what I mean? Because they will lose talent, right? Like the war for talent is real, and if they make everybody come back, people will leave.
They're not going to make. They're going to entice people to come back. They're not going to make it come back. They force. So they're not going to fully force you. They're going to have the. If you come to the office, there's free food, and if you come to the office, there's this, and if you come to the office, there's that. And eventually, my brother's in the coffee business, and the amount of money that some of those companies are ready to spend on the most glorious machines and everything just to entice. So yes, you can't take a hard step. I'm telling you that based on my observation, many companies are not accepting the remote model. They're accepting that they don't have a choice. It's a very, very different mentality, one which will hurt the company, right? Until they don't go and say, wow, our company is much more productive. people are happier because they're remote. Like, we will keep an office for everybody that does want to work remote, but we will shrink it in half because chances are that at least in the especially in the development world, which is at least half are introverted, right? Which we have not been paying attention to till this pandemic, right? Until they are ready to commit and to invest in this and they're not feeling forced, it's not going to be as good. This is pretty much my first chapter in my book, small chapter, discussing that you gotta have the right mentality. You gotta want this to really succeed in remote work.
That's really interesting. That's a really interesting observation because what I think I'm kind of reading in between the lines is like if a company is not fully bought in terms of mindset, there over time there's going to end up being essentially two like a two class system. People who are in the office get a lot of benefits and maybe, you know, whatever more, there's just more action going on. Whereas if somebody versus somebody who's remote, they're just missing out. Whereas a company that, you know, sort of burns their boats, you know, to use an analogy, by shrinking or getting rid of their office, they're kind of forced to invest in everybody, you know, because they're remote, not sort of in spite of it. Is that kind of
Yeah,
how you see things?
I guess I it's that's a nice way of expressing that the two class system is going to be a challenge. You're not hiring managers that specialize in managing remote people. You're not focusing on what makes remote people succeed in being better because you're still dreaming of most of your employees coming back to the office. You're still creating an environment where being in the office is being the winner. And that means automatically that being remote is being the loser, right? I give a few examples in my book, even when you run a conference room. If you really, really have an hybrid office that cares about the remote people, and in your conference room, you better have TVs everywhere with better technology than Zoom, using Polycom and everything that the outsiders feel like they're part of the meeting as much as the inside. If you have that little shitty speaker in the middle of the table, right, and you think anybody would actually contribute in the long term, in the short term people will, but in the long term, you're fooling yourself, right? This is so you gotta start with a remote mentality. If you're truly, truly dedicated for a hybrid, you need to think remote first, and then the people that love going to the office, they go love to go to the office because they get whatever experience they get out of it. But you know that the remote people don't feel neglected. This is not what's happening with the big companies at this moment, in my opinion.
That's really interesting. Who do you feel like is really nailing this, really getting this right? Like what companies are best in class and really, you know, sort of putting actions to this new future of work?
So, for we're discussing about a hybrid. I don't know because we haven't seen the long run of it. Of course, there's the WordPress guys, the Basecamp guys. They just mastered the remote work.
They've been doing it a decade or more, though. I mean, they've had a lot of practice.
They've been doing this a decade or more. So that they practice, they create software for it. They did good, right? Whoever implementing it right now, it's hard for me to say. I'm not a believer, right? I need to see companies doing things after to see companies doing after the pandemic to see what real results comes out of it. But so the old school companies, whoever was really into it from before, I believe them. They truly are remote companies.
Or at
But
least
I don't know yet.
who seems to be headed in the right direction? Because there are examples of names who have given up their office or announced plans to wind down their office. There are other examples of companies who decided, well, you know, we're gonna pay everybody the same worldwide. We're not gonna make people take a penalty in comp hit because they decide to live in somewhere cheaper. So that way, you know, that we kind of are very intentional about not making sort of different classes of citizenship, et cetera. Are there any companies that you feel like are really starting to head in the right direction, even if, you know, the outcome is still TBD?
Honestly, I don't want to offer information that I'm not up to date, and I don't know yet who is exciting for me. I will comment on the aspect of paying everybody the same thing. I don't think that's necessary. I don't think that it's 100% productive to the world, to be honest with you. And I know that I'm being very controversial here, because it's so easy to be that person to go, hey, we pay everybody the same thing and we pay them fair and everything. And you know what I've noticed that happens? They don't hire a lot of people, and they always still hire Americans, right? This is the experience that I've noticed with those amazing ethical companies that claim that they just hire Americans or North Americans, and they don't hire a lot, right? And I believe that the way that if you want to pay everybody the same, go ahead, congratulations. But I believe that the way that you help the world is you actually hire internationally. And hiring internationally, there's a certain motivation that you're getting a certain discount because the lower cost of living. I wouldn't recommend letting people go. If you already have existing employees and they all go remote, don't change their salary because they move somewhere else. Let them be. But if you're starting a new process of hiring, benefit from the lower cost of living. There's nothing wrong with that. I got to tell you, India, Ukraine, Argentina, Russia are all catching up because they started in the cheap labor market, right? China for sure. I mean, so there is nothing wrong with actually paying less when you're hiring new people.
What are the currently, from what you see, what are the most popular tech companies in your view that are currently providing permanent remote options? If not the best, then at least they're very popular among applicants.
What is the most popular that provide permanent jobs? You're asking for a lot of company examples, and I'm weak on that.
Well, I mean, because you're recruiting for them, so you probably see which ones get a lot of applicants and are very popular.
So most of the companies that I hire for are small to medium sized technology companies, right? So you don't know the brand, and I'm not even sure that they want to share that information. So unfortunately, I'm a little stuck on this response. I don't have access to the big brands. And how are they doing? I just read a lot that lots of the banking industry, for example, and some technology companies are really looking forward to have their people back.
Gotcha. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, what companies who are hiring for remote are really looking for. Given that remote work is very popular and increasing, you know, catalyzed by the pandemic, what are employers really looking for when they hire for a remote role in terms of qualities and skills that the ideal candidate should have?
So it's always combined to the hard skills and the soft skills, if I'm not stating the obvious. And everybody is looking for the specific combination of class, programming language development. But it is the soft skills, which becomes so super interesting. Because you are the people, more and more are looking for people that fit their company culture, with the exception that the people that are being hired come from completely different culture, right? And they still want a certain integration. That's why I noticed a big shift in the remote world that goes more to Latin America and Eastern Europe and less of Asia because of a closer integration of culture than what you have otherwise. So that's the big thing now. The big thing is because people are starting to believe that remote people can be a fully integrated member of your team and not some outsourced employee or some freelance employee. And with that belief, they have a higher expectation for that culture fit.
Do you, just kind of curious, do you think that remote work is good career-wise in terms of professional development for early career professionals in particular, like new college graduates?
First of all, it all depends on the management. I think that the world is not ready to manage people and to create a proper social environment. As I will say that there's no question about that there is one major, in my opinion, the only weakness that comes with a remote experience is the social aspect of it. This is the social emotional. It doesn't mean they cannot be fixed. I believe that good remote managers can really get this right and make sure that the social aspect of the job is great. But for young people that just come out of university, the concept of just going home and not getting as much socialization, not as much anything, is a big problem. I would say, as controversial as I am, because I'm an evangelist for remote work, I would say that we require more social, new people that graduate university should try to get a physical job, at least in the beginning.
I see. Well, as a mental shortcut or heuristic, how many years in office do you think is helpful, where you've kind of developed a better understanding of yourself and your preferences, and you've also developed some skills on how to socialize in the office that, you know, jumping to full-time remote work isn't going to be so challenging?
5 years max, right? I personally feel that if you have the right management, you can start from the beginning remote. The challenge is that there's not enough managers. I mean, in general, I believe, and maybe that's a little cynical, I don't believe there's that managers are generally very good or trained properly to be good managers. And in my opinion, a good manager could easily be a good remote manager. But in the reality that we have live like right now, 5 years, I think it would be enough.
What special skills do you feel like are really needed for managing remote employees well? Like, what makes a great remote manager?
What makes a great remote manager? First of all, an empathetic one, or a sympathetic one, depends. I just recently learned the difference between sympathy and empathy, right? So a certain level of connection. You have to be a person that is able to evaluate the well-being of the person on the other side just by having conversation, just getting intimate. Now, there's a major other challenge on the hard skills that you actually need to be able to evaluate work and not invest time looking at people coming to the office from 9 to 5 and tapping on the keyboard. That never worked, by the way. The research shows that an average person working an 8-hour shift produces about 2 hours and 53 minutes in an office work. So again, I am trying to say that this entire office hoopla never really worked, but at least you could see a person and at least you can make sure that he or she comes on time and at least doing something. As a remote manager, you really need to be able to evaluate the work. This is a tough skill. How do you evaluate how much a person develops in a day? How do you know how much he or she needs to do?
Sorry, let me just interrupt. Because I work in technology. Why is this so challenging? Like, if your code doesn't freaking work, if there's tons of bugs, or it takes you 3 times as long to crank out the number of lines as another employee, like, wouldn't these be strong indicators that something is working or broken?
Okay, so first of all, so you said if it takes 3 hours as long, so the code, so the quality of the product at the end of the day, yes, that's an easy one. But you need to know, how long does this specific code takes to be developed? This is some deep knowledge. This is not so easy. And yes, you actually said it well. You compare to other people. You see how it works. How do you do this in a startup? How do you do this when you have 2 employees? That requires a specific skill to actually evaluate the amount of production, right? And how much that production should take. I remember when I started recruiting in the beginning, when I started my company 13, 14 years ago, I was the recruiter. I'm a machine, right? But that's part of being a CEO. I did it myself. I would talk to five people at the same time, messaging on LinkedIn, a limited amount of people, blah, 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 blah. And after that is like, and my first employee, is this person keeping up with me? Is this person on the, and you need to be able to evaluate. Part of the evaluation process is going through Agile, being able to have people challenging each other, seeing comparisons. But it's not that easy. You actually need to have knowledge, right? So for you, or if you are a technologist, if you're a coder, if you know your stuff inside out, you have a set of expectations. A lot of managers are not coders, even in IT companies. They're people who motivate and pump and see the end product, but they're not necessarily the technical managers. So you need, it is very, very challenging, but you get through it by, as you said, by comparisons. You get to evaluate a certain, of course, you do need somebody technical if you're not a technical yourself, but you're able to create an environment where employees challenge each other. And that's why agile, some part of agile management is very, very powerful if you're not if you're not a specialist yourself.
Okay, got it. So you touched upon empathy, technical skills. What else to succeed as a manager, a remote manager?
Okay, so we said empathy. So you literally require to you require to be more intimate than being more of a friend. You need to have some serious art skills in the game to be able to evaluate. You're supposed to not being distracting. This is a big one. This is a big one for local offices also. The reason why we don't function. We don't produce much in an office environment, as the statistic of the 2 hours and 53 minutes is because we're continuously distracting our people, right? By the way, cubicles is the worst invention ever made. I don't know why it became so popular in the 90s, right? But just that somebody talks about a movie in the back and tapping your shoulder, hey, did you see this new Spider-Man movie? That takes you 20 minutes. Recovery time in terms of production. And when you as a remote manager try to replicate some kind of some part of this remote experience, you're also trying to replicate often the distraction. I remember back in the days when I started the business, I would literally every day because I wanted to be like in an office. I wanted in an office, you go, you talk, you motivate, you go from one person to another, check what they're doing. And I would say, hello, hey, right? To start a conversation. And I would freak my employees out. Oh my God, what does my boss want now? Oh my God, I don't know what it's gonna be. Instead of just telling them, hey, when you're free, let me know. I would like to know about this topic and that topic. That is how it gets a lot more complex in it, and I go into more details in the book, but that's how you manage distraction. If you're capable of running a work environment with the least distraction possible, you're going to get the most output out of it, and you'll never want to go back to the office environment. This is really key, managing distractions.
So you mentioned the 2 hour 53 minutes often is because of the distractions. And I'm curious, when people work remote, do you have any data on how much that number increases? Because there are distractions at home too, you know, like maybe the neighbors are noisy or your kid is at home because the daycare is off for the day, or you're waiting for furniture to be delivered, or you're just slacking off. There can be like many different distractions at home too, but you've alluded to earlier that productivity goes up. So I'm curious, like, what do you have any data on what number that 2 hours, 53 minutes increases to, given that there are some distractions, so you're not going to get a full 8 hours, but how much does that jump, in a well-managed remote organization?
So, first of all, well-managed remote organization or well-managed organization will not have those 2 hours and 53 minutes. My criticism is that a lot of places are not well-managed. But there's a research showing on travel agents that they were sent home, and that research showed that there's an increase in productivity by 60 something percent, right? I don't have the data with me. We have actually an entire ebook in the Think Remote that talks about all the improvements with, but I don't remember a statistic by heart. There is a lot, right, of information in different industries that shows a continuous increase.
Okay. Great. So empathy, tactical skills, knowing how to manage distractions, anything, any other critical skills for managers?
Any other critical skills for managers? Okay, so we talk about you got to be getting intimate. We talked about managing distractions. We talked about being able to evaluate.
It's okay if there are if those are the key ones. I just wanted to
Yes,
make
there's
sure
a lot
that.
more. Just my brain is not popping it up right
Okay,
now.
no worries, no worries. Let's keep rolling. So if you're an employee, like an applicant, what actions would you advise applicants to do to best position themselves to be competitive for landing desirable remote jobs?
Well, let people know, right, read my book, of course, but let people know that you understand how to be more productive in a remote environment. Let people know that you actually know how to manage yourself, right, at home and still be productive and independent. That would be a huge start, right? When you apply for a remote job, the first message that you should deliver that you are not is what I call the non-committals. You're not a freelancer. You're not an entrepreneur. You understand this is a real job, a career-driven job that you just happen to be at home, right? That message, if not, it's more in the interview that this message needs to deliver, because there's simply too many people that feel that once it's remote, I get to sit in my PJs all day and not turn on my webcam. And this is the and more managers are seeing this. And part of the reason, instead of enforcing a rule, that's why they're going, oh, people need to come back to the office, right? Because I don't have that control. And when you make an employer feel like with me, you will have fewer pure communication, you will understand where I am, we'll interact. I come and I work from early to the afternoon and do everything right. This is a great message that will get people a lot more interested in you. And then you apply for all today. You can apply everywhere, and it might be a remote job, but you can apply for there's already job sites that are there for remote opportunities also. Or a distant job, of course. Apply for a distant job. We might be able to get you a gig.
Okay, I want to talk a bit about compensation, and what remote jobs pay and what remote jobs are the highest paying. Let me start by asking, what can employees expect to earn in, let's say, the type of jobs that you recruit for in terms of the compensation range from low to high? And I know that totally depends on number of years of experience and where you're located, et cetera. But when you mix it all together, let's just do two roles to keep things simple. Developer
Sure.
and designer. So, you know, what would be what do you typically see at the lowest end of the range and the highest end of the range for both roles?
So the range is so broad, it's crazy. And
That's okay.
designer and developers, there's juniors, there's seniors.
Totally.
You might be disappointed with the answer, but the range goes anywhere from $15,000 a year to $300,000 a year, right? There is so many things to think about. Junior, senior, right? Which area? Most of our business come from Eastern Europe and Latin America. These people that we work with, because most of the people that come to us, so just to help you with that question, right? Most people that come to us, they want a 5 years experience developer. Whether it's .NET, C Sharp, Ruby on Rails, PHP, Python, and those individuals would still very broad, but at least I can shrink it a little bit for you. In Eastern Europe, would range anywhere from $3,000 to $9,000 per month, right? That would be a more specific. In Latin America, it's a little more affordable, and in India it's a little more affordable. So in India, you can get anywhere from 2,000 to 7,000 approximately. Again, those are not the limits, but those are the more better ranges. And same thing, India and Latin America do share the same similar market. Again, there's so many different countries in Latin America. And even India, the difference between somewhere in Chennai and somewhere in Bangalore would make a very, very different salary expectations. But yes, 3 to 9 for 5 years experience developer, same thing with designer, that will be the case.
I see. So developer and designer in those parameters will be comparable. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Once you talk North Americans, oh my God, what happened this year? It's out of control, right? The
So what are the
salaries literally doubled, right?
ranges there?
That's it. It's a six-digit salary for anybody. Free 2 years experience out of a university, you can get six-digit salary, and you can go up as $400,000 a year. Like, I've never seen prices like this.
So
Silicon Valley offered.
but that's like 5 years of experience, the same kind of experience set as the other examples you just said.
5 to 10 years, right? You know, $400,000 is more 10, 15 years. Let's be fair, right? But I have seen 5 years experience people getting paid 200, right? I've seen that. It's pretty crazy. As an engineer myself, I've been waiting for the day that engineers finally get paid more than lawyers and doctors, and the time is coming, right? Doctors really is a special profession. I'm excited that engineers are getting paid more than lawyers. Right? Maybe a little selfish on my part.
So if you're from North America, but you want to go live in a you want a lifestyle arbitrage, go live in a lower cost of living place like Argentina, are you going to get paid on Argentina wages or on American wages? Because maybe as an American, you're a lot more productive. Maybe you, I don't know. Maybe that's a wrong assumption, but it could be right. Like, so how
Well,
are compensation bands set in situations like that?
it's tough. It's a tough question because in an utopian world, everybody gets paid the same thing, but nobody gets paid the same thing even in the same region, right? And the entire model of Silicon Valley at the end of the day is they want you to live in Silicon Valley to get paid Silicon Valley salaries. So I like to live in a realistic world, right? Where a realistic, progressive, helping the world kind of world. And if you expect people to pay you in Argentina the salary that you get paid in Silicon Valley, you better be awesome, because if you're not, right, you're
Well,
they're not going to do it.
they'll fire you very quickly. But
Yeah,
I guess
they're not going to do it.
my question really is like, is this happening? Like, are companies paying for, yes, for the right
Company's
person?
paying. So no, they're not. They always get a discount.
Okay.
The moment you live in the realistic, the reality, the honest reality, not the utopian hope. Right now, they're still getting paid about half of what North American sellers get paid, which is a huge improvement because, first of all, Americans getting paid so much more, and they used to be about 30%, 30%, and now they're going to 50 to 70% of North American sellers.
So let's say you have somebody who, 5 years of experience at a large tech company in Silicon Valley. So, they're well trained, and they want to go for one of these remote jobs, and they could earn $200,000 to $300,000 if they stay in the U say the US, work remote, but they want lifestyle arbitrage. They want to move to Argentina, they're gonna ex I just want to be clear, they're gonna need to expect to take a comp hit. Is that right?
No, not necessarily. No. So if you already have a job, good for you. Make the company dependent on you, right? This is good stuff, right? Then you can potentially negotiate with certain salaries, and hopefully more and more, that you get to live anywhere in the world. If you are applying for a job, that's low chances. You are not getting it. So it's very, very different. You worked in a company for 5 years. There's something very powerful about having somebody who has the experience, the knowledge in the company, right? For me, my personal effort is always to keep my employees, right? And that's what I do, right? They want an increase. Maybe I shouldn't be talking about this in the radio, but it's like they want an increase. I try my best, right, to give them whatever is necessary to stay in the company, because there's something very powerful about my company culture, my people, my team. I love my team, right? I don't want them to move anywhere else, right? But if you're applying for a job, that's a different reality. You're not getting paid. You're not getting paid the same.
Even if you had, that kind of sterling resume background, is that right? And it just happened to be that you wanted to live in Argentina.
You better be awesome, right? Certain people get away with things, right? If it's all about supply and demand, right? But you also better be a good negotiator, right? And usually people are so good at this, right there. Incredible programmers and negotiators and everything usually end up being the CTOs of companies.
Why
That's
don't why
my
so
experience.
like it seems like a very obvious hack then is for somebody who wants to work remote to get the job first and continue living in Silicon Valley, and then 6 months later say, hey, you know what? I want to bounce out,
Perfect
go live in
hack.
Argentina.
Perfect hack. I love it. Yes, that you just found the real hack, and it works, right? And it works well. Or you're amazing, or you just, I think you need more than 6 months, because they would not appreciate the lack of commitment, right? We're in a messed up time.
Well,
Who knows?
still committed to the company. You're doing amazing. Let's say you're doing great work there, but you just want to live somewhere else.
The living after 6 months, I'm talking about managerial psychology here.
I get you.
After six, I'm not saying that it's wrong or bad and everything. After 6 months, you making a choice to skip and go somewhere else in different location, it might question your commitment to the company, right? And that would question. So the hack, I love hacks, 2 years. Stick in the company for 2 years. Ask for moving around. They might
And
say yes. They
you
might
really
say
don't see companies adjusting salaries, because most of the ones that I know about do. They will adjust salaries based on where you're going.
no. Yeah, they do. No, I see that they do, but less and less. It's not going to be. It's not going to be. It's not going to work for them. Right, companies see that in the development, maybe in other things, not really. In development, we're in trouble, right? I am having a harder time than ever to recruit. I've been recruiting for 15 years, right? And people just throwing money at each other. This COVID could be the ultimate equalizer for developers in the long run, or at least quality developers, right? Because it's a developer's market. So you have to negotiate.
By the way, when companies are calibrating their compensation, do you find that they typically are doing it by, how are they doing it? Local cost of living, cost of labor, both, something else?
Cost of living, I think, is a major reflection. They see, of course, your skills. That's an obvious one, right? But after that, and the demand, but after that, it is people evaluate based on cost of living. Yes, I till today, and I'm an evangelist for remote work, and I want the entire world to be equal in salary one day. That is my mission. But until then, I cannot, within my capacity, pay somebody in Eastern Europe what I pay in North America. And the truth is, I avoid North America because of that, because it gives me access to more talented, more affordable people, while in the meantime I'm improving economies internationally. So I feel very good about it ethically, and that's it.
Got it. Okay. Kind of the last area I wanted to touch on is like, as a remote worker, what are actions or norms or rituals that you think are important to do to create or preserve a good company culture?
Okay, So culture is an interesting thing. I find I'm a very goal-oriented person. I like to define things in order to succeed in them. And I find that the term culture has been so complicated. Like people say, people think about culture, they think about Google, sitting and playing ping pong, sitting having beers on all those funny sofas and everything, and suddenly being very productive. I for a long time could not find what it means to be to have a good culture, and I had to create my own definition because if you look at Wikipedia, the DNA of the company or the way that the company functions and everything. And the definition that I really found that has been very successful for me is culture is connect, is connecting to the company, connecting to each other, thus makes better teamwork, and connecting to the client. When you understand that the goal is connection, suddenly you can evaluate your how you achieve company culture much better, right? When I started focusing on culture in within remote environment about 6, 7 years ago, I tried to make big Zoom parties, right? I was aware about Zoom way before COVID made it popular, right? We actually found it a way better program even back then, and we tried to do big Zoom parties. Everybody had to have a drink, right? Because we do not promote alcoholism. You can have a coffee and we hang out and talk. And it was fun for the first three times. And then I discovered very quickly that actually my manager discovered very quickly that I am me and the few managers are dominating the conversation and everybody there saying, right? And then I realize that a more successful way to get connection is one-on-ones. There's a this cool app on Slack, which is really tremendous. That it's called Donut and it auto connect you with everybody in the company, and you have 15 minutes and you really get to connect with people. And I get to meet every person in my company on an individual level. And where it comes to my management, I have one-on-one drinks. Hang out, have a scotch. Sometimes I ship them scotches, right? And we go and we hang out. We have a Zoom conversation and just talk to and shoot the sheep, shoot the shit. Talk about anything and everything. And then we talk a little business. We don't talk a little business. And that's how I connect with my people. And this, in my opinion, is company culture. You don't need big parties. You don't need big fancy things. Those are things to feed the CEO's ego. They're not necessarily what creates company culture. You need to have a goal, and the goal is connection. And that's how I win it in a company culture. And I guess that answered your previous question. What is important for manager? The ability to create an amazing company culture.
All right, Sharon. Well, this has been a very interesting discussion. Definitely a little bit different than the ones that we typically do. But I think one really important, and I think that it's also a topic that a lot of folks in the FIRE community are interested in because they want to be perhaps location independent and figure out how to just take better control of their own, circumstances and context. So I really appreciate you're taking the time to share thoughts about how the future of work is evolving and remote work. And look forward to sharing this with our audience. Thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you, Andrew. It was really fun.
All right, that's a wrap. I hope you enjoyed today's guest interview and got a lot of value and insights from it. If you like this episode, please hit that subscribe button to get new episodes automatically sent to you. Would love for you to not miss any episodes because the Hack Your World podcast has a mix of action-packed solo shows where I walk you through specific strategies and tactics step by step, as well as guests who share their expertise about specific areas of personal finance. And finally, profile interviews of business owners who are trying to turn their side hustles into fully financially self-sustaining passive income streams. We break down exactly what they do, how they do it, and how much they're earning. So be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any of that great content. Also, would love if you could help me out and take 30 seconds to go to Apple Podcasts and leave a podcast review. It helps to support this podcast and it helps other people who are looking for topics like this find the podcast. And I really appreciate it if you could take a minute and just leave an honest review. All right, that's it for this week. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next time. Thanks for listening to the Hack Your Wealth podcast with Andrew Chen. If you like the show, please leave us a review on iTunes and check out hackyourwealth.com for all our latest content.